is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are jumping on for our weekly NBA pod. Going to start out, Jason, talking a little bit about tonight's Bucks-Raptors Eastern Conference showdown.
Yeah, so I watched pretty much the first three quarters of the game.
I watched most of the fourth, so we got the whole game covered.
I thought the first half was really good. Toronto was in complete control of the game. I don't know how much you saw, but the first like 3 minutes or 4 minutes of the game, the Toronto was 1 of 8 and Milwaukee was 1 of 6. It wasn't necessarily the most beautiful offensive performance to start the game, Mike. It kind of reminded me of what my pickup games look like sometimes. Lots of missed open shots, nothing pretty going on, and I wouldn't really say that the defense was even stellar. They just weren't making their shots. But I thought Toronto and it was a good game. Obviously, Milwaukee's what? They're 50-8 now, right, Mike?
Yep.
Yeah, they're 50-8 now. So I think you know start. And Toronto's got the second best record in the NBA, right? Is that correct?
Toronto's 42-16. The Lakers are 43-12. So the Lakers have
Lakers a better record, but they're the second best in the East by a good shot. And I think Toronto's pretty much. I feel pretty confident that they're going to be the two, and maybe at the worst they could drop to three. But there's no way they're catching Milwaukee. So this was just kind of a good game to watch and kind of get an idea. And what's really interesting is we have three games between Toronto, or including tonight's game, there's three games left between Toronto and Milwaukee. So we'll get to see, you know, best of three. I kind of hope Toronto, I want Milwaukee to win, and I want them to have a really good record at the end of the season. But I kind of want to see Toronto get the next one to see, like, what would happen in a game three situation. And then I know it's not a series, but it was kind of interesting to watch the play. And I don't necessarily think that anyone on either team, at least in the first half, had what I would call a great game. Like, I don't even think Giannis, when I was watching the game in the first half, I don't know what he did in the fourth quarter because it was off at that point. I don't feel like Giannis really kind of took over in the first half at all. So I don't know what he ended up doing. Mike, you want to cap it off?
I think he ended up with either 18 or 20. I can't remember.
So not a Giannis like superb game.
I think he ended up with 19 rebounds and 8 assists. Well, that's pretty good. He was pretty dominant in the fourth quarter. Still, like we talked about last week in terms of the All-Star game, I still don't know. I would still be a little bit worried about his ability to create offense in high-pressure moments where the entire defense is geared towards stopping him. I'm not sure that he can generate necessarily his own offense, but he just draws so many people that if Milwaukee shoots the ball well, they're going to be really, really hard to beat. Yep. And the thing that I came away from this game, at least in the 8 minutes that I watched, is Milwaukee is just, and we know because they're the number three offense maybe in the league, and I think they're the number two or one. Maybe they're the they're the number one. They're the number one defense and the third ranked offense. And when you look at them defensively, they are just so big and so long and so physical that there's just nowhere to go, because when you penetrate into the lane, you're running into Robin Lopez, who is just a giant. Middleton is really, really good defensively. And obviously you have Giannis lurking in the background, although Giannis had Siakam at the end of the game.
Hey, Stan Van Gundy at the beginning of the game said that Brook Lopez should be the defensive player of the year, Mike.
Well, I think if you look at his numbers around the rim and what people shoot, I think Giannis is actually number one in that category in the league in terms of guys who are within 3 feet of when they shoot near the basket. I think Giannis has the lowest defensive field goal percentage. Robin Lopez, I think, is also in the top three. And the other guy is Brook. Both the Lopez brothers are in the top three with Giannis. So the three best guys in the entire NBA are on the Bucks. And so that just points out again how good their defense is. And it's just the optics of it, how they look when you're trying to score against them. That last 8 minutes, Toronto really had a hard time generating any good looks at the basket. And I just think that that's something defensively that doesn't go away. Like, the offense may struggle at times, but Milwaukee just has so many guys that can do things. I still think offensively the key for them is going to be what Eric Bledsoe are they getting. If they get the regular season Eric Bledsoe and they don't get the Bledsoe that melted down in that series against Toronto, they're going to be really, really tough to beat, because Bledsoe goes hard to the basket. It's just going to be a matter of how is his confidence and is he going to knock down shots. If he's knocking down shots, whew, man, they are very, very tough. And I don't know how you beat them if Bledsoe is going to shoot the ball well, which he has all season.
Yeah, and just, you know, we go to the point, we could talk about Milwaukee till we're blue in the face at this point, but they're the quickest team to ever clinch a playoff spot, which I was surprised that they hadn't clinched it till yesterday, Mike, when they were 49-8. I know that it's a mathematical situation, but I found it kind of amazing that they hadn't yet clinched a playoff spot yesterday when they did. It was kind of surprising to me.
I agree. You saw the statistic during the game that they now scored 100 or more points, and I believe it was 82 consecutive games.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's more than that. I don't know. But they're which I think is the second longest streak in NBA history. The longest streak belonging to, you have any idea?
No.
You got to think about a team that it was known for.
I would say the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix Suns.
No. Go back just a little further.
So
the coach of their team was Paul Westhead. All right, sorry, this predates you, sorry. So the Denver Nuggets, the 1981-82 Denver Nuggets, who had
I wasn't alive yet, Mike, and you were.
I was 10 or 11, but Paul Westhead, that was the season where they just basically abandoned defense and they just would let the other team score so that they could come down and shoot at the other end, and that was their theory of offense. So that team scored 100 or more in 136 straight games. So Bucks. So
my question is, that team didn't win a championship, right?
That team did not win a championship. That strategy was somewhat dubious. I'm not sure that it was very successful. Henceforth,
James Harden would have enjoyed that team.
He would have. Henceforth, that situation, that particular strategy, has never returned to the NBA. So
yeah. All right, so anything else on either of those teams, Mike? I feel like we've...
Well, I'll say this. I haven't talked a whole lot about Toronto, but I've continued. I was a doubter of Toronto last year, and I've continued to be a doubter of Toronto this year. But I look at them, and I'm not so sure that... I don't know. I'm starting to come around a little bit on Toronto, not as a true title contender, because I don't think they can beat Milwaukee the way they're constituted, but... Can they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals? If you would have told me that before the season, I would have said no. If you would have told me that 6 weeks ago, I probably would have said no. I'm starting to think more and more that they could. What I find interesting in the top of the East, and this can maybe lead into a discussion about if we want to touch on anything from any of these other teams, but I'm just looking at the home and away splits
These
top teams.
Terrible.
For the top teams in the East, it's, but I mean, it's crazy. So you have Milwaukee 26-3 at home. The Raptors, 23-8 at home, 19-8 on the road. The Bucks are 24-5 away from Milwaukee. Celtics, winning record at home, 23-5, 16-12 away. Then you get into some amazing statistics. The Heat, 23-3 at home, 13-18 on the road. And then Philly. 27-2, 9-20 on the road. And, you know, you look right now, that's the 4-5 matchup. It looks like
that's a seven-game series.
it looks like that's probably going to be the 4-5 because Miami's 3.5 games behind Boston for the 3 seed. Philly is 2 games ahead of Indiana for the 6 seed, and with the injury to Jeremy Lamb, which is devastating for him, obviously, but also
he's got to be done for like a year and a half, Mike. Like just everything. He basically just shattered everything in his leg.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
I was more amazed that he was walking. I didn't like. You know, you see these guys afterwards, and they can barely walk or whatever. He literally was walking off the floor. Like, you know, I mean, he didn't look good, but at the same time, he was – I'm just – when I heard ACL, MCL, fracture, and all this other stuff, I'm like, how is that guy walking on the floor after that injury? I was amazed.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, because he's been very, very good for the Pacers, and so to lose him – and Oladipo hasn't been – you know, he's not himself clearly at this point – and he's still working his way back.
You got to kind of frame Oladipo kind of in like in the Gordon Hayward situation after his injury, right? I mean,
oh yeah, no question. He's not going to be. So Oladipo's got to get back to what he was. It's probably not going to happen, as we said, until next year. And the Lamb injury clearly hurts them. So I think Indiana's going to probably stick in that 6 seed, which makes that Miami-Philadelphia home court advantage pretty critical as we look at what's going to happen going forward.
Yeah, and I think Boston sign. You never root for a guy to get injured, but Boston being in the 3 spot, you know, I think it's a pretty good spot for them because they're going to play Indiana in the first round. Because I don't think Brooklyn's going to pass Indiana because Brooklyn's just they're falling apart, and Kyrie being out. And I don't really want to belabor that point.
Those two teams are locked in. The 7-8, Brooklyn and Orlando are locked in. The Kyrie season this year's.
No, you're not giving the Wizards any chance?
We talk about that in a second. But, I mean, just quickly on Kyrie, you got to wonder. And we've had these questions about him now since he went to Boston. And I said when he was here in Cleveland that he was a perfect second banana for LeBron. And I think it's become clear in the last 2 years that if he's your top banana, things aren't going to go well. And it'll be interesting to see if Durant is the guy that can – keep him in line and keep him in his place where he should be, which is the number 2 option. Yeah.
Did you hear the analogy that he's Stephon Marbury with the shot? I thought that was pretty good.
I mean, he's better than Stephon Marbury. You look at what he did in the NBA Finals and how good he was in those series with Golden State, and I don't think you can put him in that same place, but man, you just got to wonder with this guy mentally where he's at and what he's thinking about sometimes. And like I said, it'll be interesting to see if Durant is the alpha dog that can tamp him down to the number 2 spot and get him back to what he should be, which is second banana on a really good team. He's clearly proven in the last 2 years that he's not the guy that you want to be the face of your franchise. But you look back again at his time in Cleveland, and man, he was a fantastic second guy. And if Brooklyn can get him there and get Durant back to being the top guy, then who knows? But
it makes me really sad, Mike, because I was a huge Kyrie fan. I when he was here, even before LeBron, like I was a huge Kyrie fan. Like I was really all about him because there's no denying that he's really really talented and could be one of the top 5 players in the NBA if he's mentally and physically there. But I can't even put up with his antics anymore. I can't do it. I'm annoyed, and whether it's I'm not going to play against a team that I already played for, I don't want to go back and play in their stadium, or I'm hurt, I've got this, and then you know, I can't get mad at him for being hurt, but he's just always seems to be hurt.
You take the mental side of it, and then there's the mental piece of it and the leadership and just some of the things that he said, that part of it is all bad enough. But then you just combine it with the fact that when he was here in Cleveland and the last couple of years, he gets hurt. He's hurt all the time. He's very, very injury prone. And so if I'm hanging my hat on Kyrie being healthy and having the right frame of mind to help lead my team to a championship, that's move. You're putting a lot of eggs in one basket.
I think a better analogy is almost Derrick Rose, Mike. I think Derrick Rose is a better analogy. Like, I know he hasn't torn an ACL, but, you know, the first few years of Derrick Rose's career, he was great, right? He got an MVP in, what was that, 2009 was LeBron's first, so it had to be. But regardless, you know, he played really, really well, and then he got started getting hurt all the time, and then mentally he shut down. So I don't know that it's – I think Kyrie's better than Derrick Rose, but I think they're a similar comparison, much more similar than Stephon Marbury. I don't know if you –
Well, Rose's career was devastated by that injury. I mean, he completely devastated by the injury, whereas Kyrie's been kind of a combination of the mental, which is, I think, what eventually affected Marbury, and the physical. So they're not, again, completely apples to apples, but certainly it appears, although Kyrie, again, he was averaging almost 28 a game this year during the games that he played. So it's not like he was completely falling off the map as a physical specimen playing basketball. It's just, there's just so many things. There's such a circus around him that it makes you wonder if he can ever get back to the point where he's going to be the driving force behind a winning team. And I guess we're going to,
I think Durant. Maybe. Well,
we're
going to
find out next year.
Burner
let's put it that way. So, all right, enough Kyrie talk.
Yeah. All right, enough Kyrie. So, I guess the other injury we need to kind of address in the East would be Ben Simmons. And listen, I the fact that he went out there and he hurt himself at the end of the game or the middle of the game, and then tried to play on Saturday night, and then played for 5 minutes, and then re-aggravated it. The Philadelphia 76ers and their track record of dealing with injuries is not very good. Why they trotted him out there, I don't understand. Because now the reports, I don't know if you saw the reports today, but the reports are that he's out there. He's going to get reevaluated in 2 weeks, but he's likely out much longer than that. If I'm a Philadelphia 76ers fan, what percent of faith do you have in the organization to handle the Ben Simmons injury? Because I'm low 10%. That's where I'm going, because I don't trust them after how Fultz. Like, listen, they handled Fultz and everything, and then here's Fultz this year having a pretty good season. I mean, he's not like killing it, but he's playing much better than he did in Philly because he never played in Philly.
He's on the court. How about that?
So I'm saying, like, I have 10% faith that they're going to handle this Ben Simmons injury.
Well, I think you're right on that. I think the weird part is, as you said, that they sent him back out when clearly it appeared that he was injured. Obviously, some of that's on the player wanting to play, just like anybody would, whether you're a high school player, a college player. If you're a competitor and you think you can go out there and play, you're going to go out and play. And who knows, with a back injury, I think it's a little bit less clear maybe what exactly is leading to people who have back pain. So maybe as a player, it's a little bit easier to hide it and just say, oh, I want to get out there and I want to play. And if they're missing him for long periods of time, I know you and I have gone back and forth on this debate over who's the more important player to the Sixers, whether it's Embiid or Simmons. And we've talked about who we'd rather build around a team if we had to trade one or the other. And we could argue that back and forth forever. But the reality is that if Philly's going to reach their ceiling, as long as these two guys are on the team, you certainly want Simmons. Yeah, you certainly want Simmons out on the floor if he's still a member of your team and he's still on your roster. And so the fact that they're not going to have him is going to really hurt. And I think Philly, the Horford signing looks worse and worse every day. They sent him to the bench a few games ago, which was probably the right move after coming out of the All-Star break, based on the production and the five-man lineups and just the net rating of what goes on when Horford's on the floor versus when he's not. That signing looks like it's going to be a disaster in the next couple years, if it isn't already. And they just haven't played very well, except at home. And I don't know, let's put it this way, I don't have any confidence in Philadelphia to put together a seven-game series to beat somebody who's playing well. Now, could they win that first-round series against Miami? Sure. Could they even win the second-round series? Maybe, although I think they'd have a really hard time beating Toronto, because I think Toronto, the one thing I'll say about them, and I know I talk.
Well, they won't play Toronto.
If for some reason it broke where they ended up playing Toronto, I think Toronto, after having won the title last year, I think they've become far mentally tougher than they were back in the LeBronto years. I don't know. At this point, I want to be a fan of Philly, but more because I'm a fan of Simmons. I think of all the guys on their team, he's the one guy that I enjoy watching play the most. I'm not sure I really enjoy watching Embiid play, just because I think he leaves so much on the table every night with his conditioning and just with his on-again, off-again intensity. So I'd much rather, if it was me, as I've said before, I'd build that team around Simmons and explore what the market would be for Joel Embiid if I had to do it going forward, if I had to pick between one of the two. And if Simmons isn't going to be there, it diminishes my desire to watch the Philadelphia 76ers or hope that they're going to continue to advance. If both of those guys are there, that would be the Eastern Conference Finals that I'd like to see, would be Bucks Sixers. But if there's no Simmons, my interest in that series is significantly lowered, and I think the Bucks take care of that without much problem.
Yep. I agree. I think they definitely need both players, and I'm all about the Joel Embiid scoring 49 yesterday. I thought that was pretty awesome. I thought he had a good game, but he's done well the two of the last three games with the Simmons not really being there. You know, Milwaukee being the blip, but that's not really much of a surprise, because I think we can all agree that Milwaukee is a far superior team to Philly. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting to see where Philly ends up. I think if I'm Miami, I'm feeling pretty confident that I'm going to end up in the fourth seed at this point, because a prolonged absence. Although Miami just lost to the Cavaliers, man, JB Bickerstaff, but I think that they should feel pretty confident that they're going to end up in the fourth seed, because I just don't think that Philly's going to be able to sustain it. And it's not like Al Horford's coming off that bench and going to score a whole bunch of points in a lot of games. So I feel pretty confident that Miami's going to finish ahead of them. I'm not feeling as confident with my pick of Philly winning.
I don't think you should feel very good like about that. If you look at the standings the way they are right now in the East, I think that you can make a pretty good case that it could stay exactly the way it is. And if it does, you're going to have some interesting first-round matchups. I think Milwaukee and Orlando, that's a sweep. I think Toronto and Brooklyn, that's a 4-1 or 4-0 match. And then the next two series, I think, could be interesting, especially if Oladipo gets back close to what he was, which, again, as we said earlier, I'm not sure he's going to. But the Heat 76ers series, if things stay the way they are, that would be the series in the East. That would be the first round series that everybody would want to see, because clearly it would be the most competitive of any of those, barring something unforeseen. All right, in the East, we have two other things to talk about. Bradley Beal going back to back 50 point games in two losses. So just give me your take on that quick.
He's playing really, really well. His team, not. And I have a hard time, you know, there's the arguments, the good stats on a bad team. You know, we can argue the Devin Bookers and the Trae Youngs, but I think that Beal is better than both of those guys. I think Beal is a really good player, because he's proved it in games that actually matter. Like, he's played well in playoff games. Not great, but he's played well enough. Not that they've had a lot of playoff games, but that's just a byproduct of the terrible John Wall contract and everything that's kind of happened at Washington, put themselves in a terrible position. And, you know, I think Beal's a good player. I don't think it's a good stats on a bad team thing. I think he's really good. And I like the argument that they made on the Ringer show today was, that if Bradley Beal wasn't on the team, Washington probably would have four
That roster is pretty bad. So. It is pretty bad. And I found it interesting just they talked about who were the other guys that had gone back-to-back 50s in losses. And Wilt, who averaged 50 in a season, figures that at some point he would have lost back-to-back. And then you had two other modern guys, Harden and Devin Booker. Harden. So 50 points, regardless, if you're scoring 50 points in an NBA game, you're doing something right. And yet, ultimately, you want it to translate to team success. And in this case, it doesn't. But I'm not sure you can pin that on Bradley Beal. I think the Wizards roster is just god-awful. And they're lucky to be there. I shouldn't even say lucky. Yeah. They've overplayed what their ability level would suggest looking at them on paper. So
yeah, I had them low. I had them winning less games than the Cavs. So I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm
I don't think that's gonna happen. Although Cavs 2-1, 2-1 under Coach Bickerstaff.
All right, so let's look. I'm ill prepared for this segment of the podcast, Mike. But I mean, the Cavs schedule can't look good. The next few games.
Well, it can't. Listen, it can't look good.
They play Philly tomorrow.
You're the second worst team in the league. It's not like you can read the schedule and go, "Oh yeah, that's a win. That's a win. That's a win." Every game should be a loss unless we're playing the Warriors.
Philly's away tomorrow, Mike. Though we play Philly tomorrow at home.
That's a loss. Okay. So let's go.
That's a loss.
You can go through 10 games in this exercise. Let's go through 10 games.
All right. Friday we play at New Orleans. That's a loss. Saturday we're home to Indiana. Yeah, I think of the three games so far, that's probably our highest probability winning. Okay, we don't obviously play Sunday. Monday,
that's a
home
loss.
Against Utah.
Although that's Utah's scuffling, we can talk about that in a few minutes.
Wednesday, home, that's a loss. Boston, that's a loss. So that's five games. We don't play that day. Saturday, home against Denver. Now, we did beat Denver once
that's
already.
That's for sure a
Mike.
Loss.
We beat Denver once. Sunday, home, San Antonio.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
So seven games. Our first chance is in seven games. And then the game after that is Chicago.
Yeah,
I feel
put
like
together
we can
a
win two-game
winning streak there.
That's and the, yeah, so then J.B. Bickerstaff's record won't look as good. And then we play Charlotte the game after that, Mike.
Streak.
Oh, man, look out. Like and then Atlanta after that. Holy crap. That's a prime season right there. The last four games of that ten of our next 10 games.
That could screw
we could
up.
Go
could
4-6
our draft picks. That's
there's
bad.
Potential.
We got to start resting, guys. That's what we have to do.
Well, here's the thing. I think that we've both said it at different points of this podcast. I truly feel like Kevin Porter is the highest ceiling out of the three, right? After watching that game last night, like I will be honest with you. When we were texting last night, I texted you saying Cavs question mark, and I had turned the game off when they went down 22 because I was like, I have too much I needed to get done, and I was at that point the game looked over. I checked out. And my buddy sends me a text. How did the Cavs just win that game? And I literally had to read the text three times, Mike, because I was like, what are you talking about? They were down 22. And then I saw Kevin Porter Jr. had 30. He's got some Harden in him, Mike. He's got some James Harden in him. That little step back that he hit two step back threes, Harden-esque. Not quite to the level of expertise, but he's lefty. I don't want him to be Harden-esque in the sense that I don't want him to be like a ball stopper, but he can play so well, and that game
he's
right there proved it last night.
He's very
he took
herky
over.
Jerky with the ball, and he really understands how to change speeds. He really understands how to use his body. The step back that he has is pretty solid in that I don't see many guys being able to affect it when he uses it the way that he's used it when he has things going. And he can see the floor. He makes good passes when he gets into the lane. He's not just always looking to score. I think he has some ability. I think he definitely could end up being the best one of those three guys of the Sexton Garland and Porter trio. And I think there's a good chance that Porter could end up having the best career out of all of them.
I think the best thing that Bickerstaff has done in the three games that he's coached Mike is he's riding the guys that are getting them somewhere, like in the late game situations. Unlike, like the other, I think last night I read a thing that Tristan Thompson and Larry Nance Jr. played the last 17 minutes or something like that, or last 15 minutes. Like, he didn't sit them because they were playing so well, and he wanted to reward that. And, you know, I know that you can only do that so much before you wear guys out, but it seems like at the end of games, he's not going, okay, well, I've got to put in Sexton, I've got to put in Garland, I got to put in Drummond, I've got to put in Love. And I mean, I feel like Love's kind of, he's been quiet the last few games. I don't think that he's like, but he also is not whining about it either. And I think, but I also think that he respects Bickerstaff. Obviously, I don't necessarily know the dynamics between everything going on there, but I think that Bickerstaff definitely has the ear of the players way more than Beilein did. And I don't really want to spend a lot of time talking about Beilein. Did you see the report today that came out about the theory that Beilein caused Windler's injury?
No, I did not hear
summer
that.
League?
No, I
did you not see hear. That article? So his Beilein was host having like the kids in summer league do 3-a-days, like literally do 3-a-days, like skill work three times in the each day before the game. So they were going out there and they were just exhausted by the time they played the games, which they're going against guys who aren't playing nearly as much in the summer league, like the practices and whatever, and the conditioning that was going on. Well, supposedly. And I don't have all the details. I don't have an account on The Athletic, and I've already used my free time on multiple times, so I don't pay for The Athletic, Mike. But supposedly, Windler started to have issues in the middle of the summer league, and it was because of he felt like he was had to push himself at those practices, and that caused the reaction in his leg. Now, who knows? Would have that happened for another coach? We can't say, but quote-unquote being overworked led to his injury, supposedly. And that's what the doctors
all right, well, John Beilein is going to land on his feet somewhere probably despite all this. So I heard a rumor somewhere.
I don't know. Well, he's got a different role in the organization.
Although I also heard a rumor that maybe he's going to go to Texas. So who knows? Anyway,
yeah, I've heard that
too. Last thing about the Cavs, Shaka. Andre Drummond. Do you have any interest in having him return to the Cavs next season?
I think you have him return as a possible trade asset. I think he's gonna sign a player option.
You think he's gonna opt in?
I mean, he's got to $28.6 million. He's got 28.6 million reasons to opt in. He's not getting that money on the market, so I think he's opting in for 1 year, and then at that point, you know, we can kind of use him as a trade piece. If he's on a team halfway through the season before the trade deadline, I think he could be a trade piece that a team talks themselves into. Oh, this guy could help us in the playoffs. So I think that's what's going to happen. I don't think they're going to trade him. If he opts in, I don't think they trade him in the offseason. I think they're going to start off the season with him on the team
and go from there. I'm not a fan of the Andre Drummond experience. So, yeah.
Dude, he hit a three yesterday.
That's great stuff. If I have to watch him for another third of this season and all of next season, that'll be plenty.
Oh, so speaking of trade assets that could affect a team, I heard something recently, and I want to ask you the question: who is the last player that has been bought out of a contract and played meaningful minutes and has won an NBA title? Mike, do you know the answer to this question?
I have no idea.
Peja Stojakovic.
With Dallas, yeah, with Dallas.
2011 Dallas Mavericks. That is the last player that has played meaningful minutes. And I think they said the meaningful minutes was he had to play 100 minutes in the playoffs or 100 minutes in the finals. I don't remember what it was. But it was either 100 minutes in the – it had to be 100 minutes in the playoffs. There's no way he played 100 minutes in the finals. But – he's the last player that has been bought been brought in on a buyout
situation that's won an NBA
championship. Is he going to play meaningful
Reggie
minutes,
Jackson?
Though? I don't think so. Dude, to the West.
I think we're done with the East. We don't need to spend any time on the dreadful Cavaliers. Let's move away from that.
Yeah, so I think So the West, I think the Lakers are obviously number one seed, and I don't think there's anyone catching them. I think that's done. It's done and over. And by the way, LeBron is having a heck of a game right now, Mike. I know about 2 minutes ago he was at 28 points, and he hit his was shooting 11 of 16 from the field. Efficient, very efficient. LeBron, typical, like playing really, really well. I think the Lakers are the one seed. It's the interesting piece is who the heck's going to end up at two, because it's all over the place. These teams are all over the place. You've got Utah falling off the wagon. You got Denver.
Yep,
I think Denver's currently number two, right?
Two games out of the Rockets, three games out of the Jazz.
Clippers. You don't know where the Clippers are going to end up, because you don't know is Paul George. How many games is Paul George is playing? How many games is Kawhi playing? When they're playing, are they going to get along with Montrezl Harrell and all the people that are not doing it? You know, and then you've got this stupid Houston Rocket team, who in their last 9 games is 8-1. Just this small ball lineup.
Well, I think the
just
thing
killing
is, I think
teams.
The thing,
Westbrook looking like a completely different player, not shooting threes. He's only shooting like 2 threes a game now instead of shooting whatever he was shooting, 4 or 5. And they look like a different team. Would I be surprised if Houston somehow ended up at the 2 seed at this point?
No, I don't think you'd
probably
be
surprised. Not surprised.
I think what is surprising is the fact that Westbrook has just become, I think, the best version of what you would want him to be, which is a guy who doesn't take outside shots, a guy who just mercilessly goes to the basket and utilizes the ability that he has, which is A, his unbelievable athleticism and ferocity, and then just his ability to finish in the key compared to what he does when he's standing out there taking threes, where he's probably the all-time worst volume three-point shooter in the history of the league. And so you eliminate that shot from his shot profile, and suddenly he becomes a way more effective, way more efficient player. And now you couple that with the fact that there's nobody ever in the lane for the Rockets on offense. I mean, they're not even faking the fact that they have somebody in there. There's just legitimately nobody there. There's never anyone there. And so when that's all spread out, he just gets to the basket. Like the other day when they played the Jazz and Rudy Gobert is guarding. Yeah.
He was basically neutered, Mike, the whole game. Because he's guarding the guy out in the three-point line. Well, what's Rudy Gobert good at, Mike? He's good at playing defense.
Right, and he's good at protecting the rim. He's not good on defense if he has to chase Russell Westbrook around outside trying to constrain his dress.
Did you see that possession that he had
yes.
to do that? Did you see the
yeah,
possession
yeah.
that he had to do that? Oh,
well,
that
see,
was,
the thing
that was
is,
great
is
video.
That
I loved it.
With Gobert, because he's so limited offensively, and he's way better than he was 2, 3, 4 years ago for sure, but you're not posting up Rudy Gobert and dropping him the ball, and he's just punishing the 6'2 or 6'4 or 6'7 guy that's trying to guard him. He's just not that kind of player. And when you can't punish teams at the other end for playing small, that's where teams are going to get into trouble that's where the Jazz can get into trouble with teams that go small against them, because Gobert is just not good enough offensively to be able to punish those small ball lineups. I think if I'm Utah, I clearly want to avoid the Houston Rockets at all costs. I want to be
I think Denver wants to avoid them too, Mike. I don't think Denver will want to play them.
Right.
Jokic is their best player.
But Jokic is a much, much better offensive player. Jokic is going to go down in the post against somebody and be able to abuse any Houston Rocket defender that they put on him in the post and score. And so that's the difference. Can Houston continue to exploit Jokic at the other end? Sure. But Jokic can come back at the Rockets on the offensive end of the floor. And so that's the diff.
Oof. Mike, Markieff Morris just took a wonderful three-pointer, Mike. It was beautiful. You'd be proud of him. He was just jacking it up there on a LeBron feed, and
nice,
he completely broke the crap out of it.
I'm probably about to see it here in a second. There it is, right there. It is right there. I missed it by just a little. Anyway, so I think, again,
just a little outside
this Western Conference and talk about who wants to play who doesn't want to play who. And I think any of those teams, 2 through 7, that's going to be – those series are going to be crazy depending on who plays who. I don't think anybody really wants to play Oklahoma City. Does anybody want to see Luka in the first round, not knowing for sure what he's capable of doing in the playoffs? I have no idea.
I think people are capable of knowing what he can do in the playoffs, and I know it's not the same thing, but just watching his stuff
right,
when
but
he
I'm
played
just saying,
in the playoffs
like, is,
in Europe. I mean,
as good as he's been – yeah, right.
Is there another level? Is that what you're saying? Is there another level?
As good as he's been in the regular season, and does he have another level?
I'm gonna tell you right now, okay. I have the answer to the question.
All right, so
it's yes.
So let's say
it's yes.
So let's say that he does.
There's no doubt in my mind.
Already, Dallas has they're the best historical offense in the history of the league. Did you know that?
Yeah. Well, that one group.
That was an article I think on the Ringer.
The fact that's
true, and you look at what their roster is made up of, clearly that's all driven by one guy. I mean, it's all driven by Luka. And not to say that they don't have nice complementary pieces.
Well, I thought it was going to be Seth Curry.
Clearly they have complementary pieces around Luka, but it's driven by Luka. So if I'm any of I'm one of those other teams, I'm not so sure I want to try to play the Mavericks in the playoffs and not knowing what Luka I'm going to get. I mean, maybe I get 15% better than what I am right now, Luka. And if that's the case, holy crap. I mean, they're going to.
Yeah. I mean, I really think, Mike, that all four of the Western Conference series could be interesting. Like, even if New Orleans sneaks into that 8 seed, Mike, I'm telling you what the Lakers don't want. They don't want New Orleans sneaking into that 8 seed. I have no doubt in my mind that the Lakers will win that series, but the road through them, as opposed to the road through Memphis, is a totally different thing. Because I think New Orleans has a chance of winning one or two games. I don't think Memphis can beat them more than one time.
Memphis is in trouble because Jaren Jackson's hurt and out for. I don't know. I think he was another guy who they said they were going to reevaluate him in 2 weeks. So.
Oh, that's the four.
Yeah, so that doesn't sound
rather foreboding,
good.
Right?
And we know. I think we talked about it last week. Just the difference in strength of schedule. I think Memphis has one of the tougher schedules left in the league, and New Orleans and Portland both have some of the easier schedules left in the league. And so, I said, and I think you said last week too, that you thought Memphis was going to get there, was going to keep that spot, and I said Memphis was going to keep that spot. But with this latest injury, and they've now lost 3 in a row.
They're playing Houston tomorrow. That's a loss. Sorry.
I mean, New Orleans is coming on. Let's put it that way. And we've talked about Zion to no end on the podcast. But the guy's good. I mean, what he's doing with the Lakers tonight. And he just continues to be absolutely amazing. And he's only going to get better. And I can see New Orleans getting there. And if they do, if that's the 1-8 – that's going to probably be the highest-rated first-round series in the whole league if you have LeBron and the Lakers going against Zion.
Not only that, it's probably going to be the greatest 1-8 series ever, like, anticipated. Because think about this, Mike. You have the potential for it being LeBron versus Zion, and then the second round would be not as much. I mean, depending on who ends in the 4-5 spot, you could have LeBron versus Harden. You could have, and then Western Conference Finals, whatever that ends up being, LeBron versus
Denver. You got to think at some time you're getting
Lakers. Then you get to the finals, and you've got LeBron versus Giannis. And I'm just thinking, like, the NBA is probably jumping for joy if this is how the things shake up. Just because I think the ratings in the playoffs will be ridiculous if you're getting LeBron Zion, LeBron Harden, and then the finals is LeBron,
LeBron Giannis. You're missing.
I think the NBA would
LeBron,
be jumping for joy.
Kawhi, LA showdown. So,
I don't know if I have faith in the Clippers right now.
Well,
kind of off
the
my
Clippers
radar,
are just
I,
a funky team because clearly, it appears that they're not that worried about the regular season. And I'm not sure that that's the right way to approach it. Plus, Paul George just has been hurt and hasn't played, and they haven't been able to put their best five-man lineup out there on the floor.
Yep.
I think if you look at them when they're fully healthy and everybody's playing, they still look as devastating on paper as they did before the season. However, what does that translate to in terms of actual performance out on the court? Can they get to the level that they're going to need to get to in order to beat LeBron and Anthony Davis in a playoff series? I'm not sure that they can summon that, but who knows? I wouldn't write them off. Let's put it that way. I would not any one of these series, especially as we said, if New Orleans gets to that eighth seed, depending on how those matchups break out, it's going to be very, very interesting to watch those Western Conference series.
I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to be taking a lot of naps.
Well, that's always my favorite. Honestly, my favorite
staying up.
My favorite to watch is always the Western Conference first round, because typically I don't watch as much Western Conference basketball during the regular season. One, because it's late at night. Two, just because a lot of times
you're doing work
as opposed to sitting in and watching games. So I will watch most of those Western Conference playoff games when the first round rolls around, and I'll enjoy that as much as any basketball at any point during the entire NBA schedule. Those Western Conference first round games are always fun, especially because there's multiple games in a night and yep. whatever. So I always enjoy that. They're going to be crazy matchups.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So you just talked about things you are going to be watching. Should we transition
sure, absolutely.
To the little
Let's
thing
do it.
You wanted to do at the end of the? So what are the Mike before the podcast? We were talking, and Mike said, "Let's talk about the three teams in the NBA. It doesn't have to be a playoff team. Three teams in the NBA that you have zero interest in watching play basketball right, as of this moment. Zero interest. Those were the limitations, right, Mike? Those were the only limitations.
Any reasoning behind that, you can put anything that you want in terms of your thought process of why you say that. But what three teams do you have no interest in watching?
Okay, so I wrote down these were the first three teams I wrote down. I'm not 100% set that these are the okay. three teams I'm going to end with. But the first team that I wrote down was the Charlotte Hornets. I have zero interest in watching them play basketball, Mike. I can't name a player on that team that I want to watch
Charlotte's
play basketball.
Charlotte's got to be on that list. They have Devontae Graham as their most exciting player. And Devontae Graham could walk through my living room right now and I wouldn't know who he is. So...
Yeah, so Hornets okay. were my first team I wrote down. The second team that I wrote down were the Knicks, and they're just terrible, and I don't know that there's anything interesting to watch about the Knicks at this point.
So I have the Knicks
as my second team. And then my third team was a team that you had going to the playoffs this year in the Western Conference, the Sacramento Kings. I have zero interest in watching them. I guess the only interest, the 1% chance that I want to watch them is to see, is Luke Walton going to get fired? That would be the only thing that I'm interested in. I don't really have anything. I literally think I've watched 0 minutes of Sacramento Kings basketball.
So let me just quickly, before I share my other two, we're in agreement on the Hornets. Let me just quickly counterpoint the two teams that you talked about. So the Knicks, there's just the spectacle of the dumpster fire that is the New York Knicks. Number two,
he's going to buy the Mets next.
Good luck with that, New York. They do have a couple of guys who I still am mildly interested in seeing what they become. So I'm thinking of RJ Barrett. I told you I went and saw the Knicks play the Cavs, and I watched Frankie Smokes play, and there's something there that's interesting to me. I don't know what it is, but there's something there that makes me think that if he got into a better situation and he got into the right role, that he could actually be a contributing member to a winning team, because he plays defense. He sees the floor. He's a good passer. I don't know. There's at least some redeeming quality for me watching the Knicks. And then the Sacramento Kings –
okay.
The main reason why I'd want to watch them is to see De'Aaron Fox. I just think De'Aaron Fox is
a good player. So I would tune into the Sacramento Kings to watch De'Aaron Fox. Okay. So that's why those two teams were not on my list. So my second team.
Okay. How much Sacramento Kings have you watched?
I have not watched a whole
lot
of Sacramento Kings, I have to say. I have not.
Okay,
okay,
I just
you could probably ask me about some pretty good teams too, and I could give you the same answer. So, all right.
So okay.
My other two teams. One is the Minnesota Timberwolves. So
I don't know why I didn't think of them.
I'm not interested in the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves theoretically have things that could be interesting. Karl Anthony Towns is a tremendous offensive player.
They just traded
for D'Angelo Russell. So Towns is hurt, so you're not being able to look at what that combination looks like. But still, those are two interesting players. And yet, I look at Minnesota. They've been, I don't know if it's mismanaged, poorly coached, poorly owned. Just, I don't think you can build a winner around Towns because he doesn't play defense and he's shown no inclination of being any kind of a leader. And they're just terrible. I have no desire to watch them. I don't enjoy. I don't enjoy watching Towns. The only possible redeeming thing that I can think of for watching the Timberwolves, and this is just my own personal thought, is because I wanted the Cavs to draft Jared Culver, I'm mildly interested in Jared Culver's progress
He's been terrible.
He's shooting like 40% from the line, which is not a good sign for his long-term ability to be any kind of a functional, you know, scorer in the NBA. Maybe he's going to end up being a role player who can defend, but he certainly doesn't seem like he's going to be any type of a star. And then my third team is the Detroit Pistons. And honestly, I'm not sure I can name five players on the Detroit Pistons.
I can name John Henson.
Brandon Knight. Luke Kennard.
Brandon Knight. Luke Kennard. Derrick Rose is still with them, right?
Sure.
He didn't get traded, did he? Derrick Rose.
They got the French dude, Samadega Dalababara, who they drafted in the first round this year, the 19-year-old kid from France.
Yeah, I don't know. The only reason I could name
Christian Woods.
Two of them
that was one of
the
reasons
Cavs
why they
before.
Got rid of Andre Drummond was to bring in Christian Woods. I guess my point is, of all those guys we just named, there is not one single soul on that Detroit Pistons team that I have any interest to tune in for and watch.
So what you're saying is the only way you would watch the Detroit Pistons play is if Trevor Huffman came out of retirement
and played for
his hometown team.
Or I might watch replays of old Pistons games during the Bad Boys era.
Bad Boys.
Trying to invoke the Jordan rules against Michael Jordan. So
yeah.
It was. Well,
that was a fun exercise,
Mike.
Maybe next week we should do the top three teams that we would drop anything to.
All right, we can do that.
To watch. Let's do that next week. We'll do the preview. A little preview for next week. I think we can agree. We know where one of the teams is going to be. I think we're going to agree with that.
We'll leave that for next week for sure.
Little tease for next week. That's what they call it in the biz, Mike.
There it
tease.
Is. All right, anything else we have to touch on?
No, but I think this is going to be perfect timing. We're going to see the heck of a finish of the game. Lakers are up 4 with like 8 minutes left, and Zion's playing out of his mind right now. So I think it's going to be fun little last 8 minutes that I was planning on going to bed.
Yeah, I agree. I'm probably going to do the same. So thanks to everyone out there for listening, jumping on with us here on our weekly NBA pod, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Hey Hoopheads Nation, check out this new offering from Tyler Whitcomb Basketball Coaching Courses. The Steve Wojciechowski Marquette Playbook by Brian Applin is now available. Wojciechowski is in his sixth season as the head men's basketball coach at Marquette University. Visit coachtube.com/users/Tyler Whitcomb to check out this great resource.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.